is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thanks for listening. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
Well, hi, Susan. And normally, on this day, Leanne Harder comes in from Nevada with the Story County Report, but we don't see her. Where is she today?
She wanted to wait until next week, June 19th, when she could announce the new Story County Supervisor. The appointment will be announced on June 18th, so this will be a real news story for us on Wednesday's Local Talk. We talked about festivals last week all over our listening area, Boone, Story City, and Cambridge, as well as events in Ankeny and Des Moines. So I wanted to bring us back to KHOI and the Ames Art Walk last Friday night. Then we'll turn to events of an entirely different nature.
Well, now, what's that, Susan?
Stay tuned. But first, I want to share the feeling of the Art Walk, starting in front of the KHOI studio. Outside, we had Red's Blues Band as I walked across the street to talk with visitors and artists in front of the Octagon.
The Art Walk is fabulous. Every year, I think it's one of the most fun events in Ames because you see people, you see the talent that we have locally, and it's just fabulous. And it's a beautiful night.
Are you one of the artists?
Yep.
So, would you like to tell us your name and what you're doing here?
I do ceramics. My name is Ruben Ruiz.
And
this is what I do.
Yeah. I'm a rover reporter for KHOI Radio, so
okay.
You'll have to tell us what your art looks like.
I do kind of organic things. Everything is with flowers and animals, lizards, frogs. Yeah, and I usually work with porcelain clay.
And you have something that's in process here, I believe.
Yeah, I just finished a base. I prepared it before coming here, and then I just put the flower on it. Yeah.
Have you done all of that since you've been here?
Yeah, actually I have to finish fast because the rain dries so fast because of the weather, so I just finished right now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I am making bowls. This is like my 12th year or something like that doing Art Walk, and I've been demonstrating wood turning and making bowls and platters and hollow forms and things, just different things out of wood, and showing people how we can do it out of wood.
Well, what kind of wood is this?
This is cherry wood that has been harvested from an acreage up northeast of Ames back at the end of March. And we prepare the wood, we get it ready to work, keep it wet, and we're actually turning the wood wet, and we'll turn it to shape roughly, allow it to dry for anywhere between 6 months and a year. And then we'll come back to the same piece and true it up again, sand it, and put a finish on it, and that's when it goes to the galleries.
Unlike furniture makers, you don't want your wood dry.
Normally, we like to have it on the wet side simply because you can't find dry wood in these sizes. To dry the wood that's this thick, kiln operators will not allow, not tie up their kiln for a year or two to get a wood this dry, because it has to be dry very slowly or else it's going to crack all over the place. So we have it's a completely different sort of a protocol and approach to selecting the wood and using the wood, as opposed to what we call flat wood workers that are making furniture and various other items, joinery.
Are there many of you working like this?
Here in Ames, we actually have a chapter of the National American Association of Wood Turners, national organization. We have 16,000 members across the country, and we've got right here in Ames, we've got an organization, the Ames Area Woodturners, that we meet once a month, and we have a very active group in town, so there's more than one, for sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Do you want to give your name?
Sure. My name's Rob Wallace, and I've been part of the Octagon for a number of years on the Board of Trustees, and also associated with the Ames Area Woodturners.
Are you the jewelry maker?
Yes, I am.
Oh, could you tell me a little about your jewelry?
Absolutely. I have genuine leather jewelry that's all hand-cut just south of Des Moines, just south of Indianola there. So I cut everything at my home. So I like the phrase farm fresh accessories because I live on a farm. So I make everything right there. I've got lots of different options in leather earrings. I have leather bracelets, and they're all handmade. So made right in Iowa, which I really love. So
what do you think of Art Walk?
It's good. I'm parked way down by Ann Maud's. I think if I'm parked way down there, there's a lot of people here, which right. is always good.
Thank you.
My name is Kelly Murphy, and I run Throwing Stones Glasshouse out of Ames, Iowa here.
It didn't look like you've broken very many things.
Well, with my display, you don't get to see all the things that I've broken. But, the work that I do is mainly in fused glass and metal work. And so it can get rather hot and sharp, and so it can be kind of harrowing at times. But I quite enjoy the creativity of it.
Can you describe your what you have here for sale?
Well, I have many pieces of jewelry, a lot of earrings, which I particularly like to make. I have some necklaces as well as some wine glasses that are hand-painted, various rings, and I also have some ornaments, which I actually brought in. They're very popular with a lot of people. I used to sell them at Gray Elephant across the street here, and so I thought I'd bring them tonight because a lot of people have requested them.
Thank you. So you're doing charcoal portraits?
Yes, I am.
So, how long have you been doing this, and where did you learn?
Well, I am a recent student that just graduated from Iowa State. I started getting into portraiture around my sophomore or junior year, so 2 or 3 years ago. Just recently, I've been deciding to just draw people whenever and draw people and get money for it and be recognized as an artist. So, yeah.
What's your name?
My name's Jamie Malone. Yeah, and then I also go by Pappy Malone online.
Yes. Oh, so people can get your work online?
Yes. I have a website. It's just pappymalone.com. Or I have an Instagram, which is Pappy Malone Illustration, and that's where I post most of my work.
These are some of my colored pencils, drawings.
Why don't you tell us a little about them and how you got started doing this?
I've been drawing ever since I could hold a pencil. Man, my best friends are all super artistic, and it got me into art. I use art as like a stress relief and just for fun.
Oh, it looks like your pictures are fun.
Thank you.
Do you have fun doing them?
Yeah, for sure. It's my favorite thing to do.
Hi. Hi. Do you want to tell me what you think of Art Walk?
Oh, we love the Art Walk, and what a beautiful evening. Everyone should come downtown and just enjoy the wonderful evening because it's the perfect night. We came from out of town to take this in, so come on down and have a fun night.
What town did you come from?
We're from Marshalltown.
Wow, long way.
And we love Ames, so we're here quite a bit.
Calm down. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Naomi Friend, and I do cyanotype and mixed media, which is, cyanotype is an antique photo process. So I paint the cyanotype on fabric or paper, and I use negatives that I make from digital pictures that I take, and I do a sun print, and then I do painting on top of that, and I also have a new series here that uses candle smoke to make a silhouette of different animals. So the work is about the interaction of people and the environment, so maybe the animals that live around us and how we shape the world they live in.
Oh, Thank you.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi, Susan.
Are you an artist or a work of art?
Both. Or a piece of work. Depends on how you look at it.
And you're Rhea Kiner.
I certainly am, last I checked. I make these out of Nespresso capsules, little aluminum coffee capsules, and I recycle them. And, it just keeps it out of the waste stream, and they're just so light that they don't bug your ears, which I love. They come in pretty colors, and then you just sculpt them.
Hi, what do you think of Art Walk?
Well, I think this is a fabulous night, and there's a great band in front of KHOI and a wonderful banner to paint. So I couldn't find my favorite color, turquoise, so I painted green everywhere. And then I got free amazing photographs from Avec Design from this artist named Diane Michaud. Laurie is giving away photographs for free or a dollar that are really wonderful.
In case you just tuned in, we've been listening to the sounds of Ames Art Walk last Friday evening, taking a loop down Main Street and back to the Pantorium, where Red's Blues Band was still playing, and people were buying organic burgers from Burgers on the Fly and going into KHOI to sit at small tables with peonies, where they could either eat their dinner, nibble some homemade cookies, drink lemonade, and watch a dozen or so volunteer mural makers contributing to the 16-foot-long KHOI mural.
And, Susan, it's right out there in our outer office,
yes,
freshly painted by volunteers, very colorful, and that will hang until next year, I suppose.
That's right. It'll come down for the 4th of July parade. We carry our mural in the 4th of July parade.
Sounds like a good idea. And that Art Walk sounds like the place to be if you weren't at the Scandinavian Days Festival last weekend, like I was in Story City. And I'm glad this week we're taking a break from festivals, but not from stimulating events in central Iowa. Up in Briggs Woods near Webster City, Legacy Learning is sponsoring a workshop on wild foods with Ben Hawks, who is our first guest today. Welcome, Ben.
Hey, good to be here.
You are someone I'm really interested in talking to because you have a wealth of information about which I don't have a clue. So we're going to start educating ourselves first about the event coming up there. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so there's an event at Legacy Learning Boone River Valley. It's up near Webster City, and it's going to be a Saturday and Sunday deal. I'm going to be teaching a course that focuses on wild food. It's going to be the identification of collecting, processing, cooking, and consuming of a whole bunch of really neat plants and mushrooms that occur in Iowa. We're going to be making some drying racks to preserve some of the things that we find, and then we're also going to be making some sodas from flowers or fruits, depending on what we find, and I'm really looking forward to it.
So if you were cut off from civilization, you could survive better than anybody I know. Is that right?
I don't know who you know, but I'd have to say that the first winter would be the hardest.
That's right. But, you know, a variety of plants grow right here in Iowa that are edible. Now, dandelions are edible, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. You know, I usually like to ask people when I get talking about wild food, like what their first wild food experience was. Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of times it's dandelions or a plant called sorrel. I hear it called sour grass, you know, that little yellow flower that grows in your fence rows, or mulberries. And, you know, we're presented with a lot of these things as children, but we usually tend to get away from them. And I guess some people make it into a hobby.
Well, you know, when it comes to dandelions, there was a veritable feast on my lawn this spring.
Hey, tell you what, I got 5 gallons of dandelion wine in the root cellar right now waiting to be bottled. And
I got to find a way to commercialize my lawn. Dandelion wine, $20 a bottle, coat of Paul.
Hey, tell you what, the roots of that plant are probably my favorite part of it beyond making wine with the flowers. You can clean the roots up pretty well, chop them up into little pieces and roast them in the oven, and they make a fairly suitable incredible coffee substitute. You know, I usually don't like comparing things to other foods, you know, because it kind of gives us a false impression of what they are. But it's kind of chocolatey and smoky, and it's really tasty
chocolatey
treat.
And smoky.
Yeah.
These are dandelion roots.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah, give them a little roast in the oven, and you'd be surprised. You can pick your own darkness, you know, and throw them in the coffee maker just like you would anything else.
I'd like to see you open up a stand in New York and suddenly become trendy. And every cup costs about $45. And the people on Broadway say, Ben's cool.
Yeah, there you go. You
know, everyone's got to have a dandelion root.
Well, my wild food friends and I always joke about how much these meals would cost in New York or L.A. that we make, you know, that we just pick out of the backyard. And, you know, if they're pretty enough, you could probably get away with it.
They're not only pretty, but you'd be trendy. Oh. And once they accept you, man, yeah, all the good people come, you know.
I need a manager if you're looking to.
Let's go to New York. We'll have the whole cast of Saturday Night Live right there. And once they do it, everyone will be drinking this stuff.
All right.
Well, now, Ben, a lot of other interesting things about Ben that we should all know. And one is that he and his wife canoed the entire Mississippi River. Is that right?
That is not true.
Well, I have it here in my notes. And I better elaborate because
you
at least dipped your toe, right?
I am not married. I've never been married. But I did canoe the whole Des Moines River with a partner that I used to have. That was in 2015. That was about a 600-mile trip. It took about 3.5 weeks. And then I did also solo canoe the Mississippi in 2012. People may remember that year. It was a pretty drought year. Took about 4.5 months to go all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico, and that was quite an adventure.
You know, I love the lure of the Mississippi because I'm a Samuel Clemens fan. And, of course, he was a riverboat pilot. And in his biographical material, it really talks about the needed skills of a pilot because – the river was constantly changing, and what was deep was shallow, and everything changed with a lot of other elements becoming involved, like how dry it was or how deep the water was or where the sand shifted. And so a riverboat pilot had to be very skilled.
Yeah.
Tell us about some other things that are goodies out there in nature that we can have in Iowa.
Yeah, so I guess right now, some of the probably the most easily identifiable and abundant wild food to be harvested is probably the golden oyster mushroom. They're actually an escapee from mushrooms that were cultivated indoors, but they are kind of seen as an invasive species, and, you know, we can do our part to eat the weeds ourselves. These golden oysters usually grow on dead or dying elms, and they can fruit in just a very, very large flushes. I found 25 pounds on a log this year, and that's not uncommon. They look just like your oyster mushrooms you buy at the grocery store, except they've got a bright yellow cap and white gills. And they're a nice spring treat, and they'll be fruiting all summer long.
You know, that's where I hear a lot about edible things in the wild because of the real attachment to mushrooms, and people brag, and they guard the places where they find them. It's secret. And I've always heard that if you eat the wrong mushroom, it's bad.
Yeah.
How bad is it, Ben?
Well, I don't really like to focus on that all too much. You know, that's kind of like the glam side of it. You know, I try to focus on the things that are good about it. So you have to imagine that you don't go out into the woods just randomly eating things. I don't go to the grocery store and confuse the food aisle for the cleaning aisle. And there are actually very few mushrooms out in the wild that will kill you. You kind of have to be trying if you look at just the sheer diversity of species out there to find one that's going to cause you any harm. Just like if you, turn left on a red light, you know, and make a bad move, it's not going to be good for you.
I'd like to break in here because I've lived in Europe, and they have, of course, different mushrooms. So I think maybe there's a little bit of a warning when mushrooms look like something you knew at home, because we knew of a Chinese man in Europe who went out mushrooming with some German friends, and he thought he knew the mushrooms, and he went out and picked some mushrooms, and literally his case was so serious they had to rush him to a specialty hospital and change all his remove all his blood.
Yeah.
Wow. And
yeah, those situations, I mean, definitely know what you're picking, but those situations are such in the minority of
sure.
the experiences of wild
right.
food that, you know, I just try to not perpetuate the poison plant fable, you know,
right.
that we need to fear these things. They're not things to be feared.
No.
They're things to be appreciated and
enjoyed.
And
the key is,
respected.
Ben, you're the educator on this. And so someone who goes to this event in Webster City will be hearing things that will be a total revelation to them and
yeah.
something that they have never encountered before.
Well,
what do you plan to do that? What, you have your own seminar that you conduct?
Yeah, so it's going to be a pretty loosely structured course. You know, we're going to be walking through the woods and the prairies and the wetlands, and just I'll be talking about what we encounter, and we'll be harvesting it as we encounter it. We're going to be creative in how we prepare it, and you know, that's the thing about foraging is you can kind of set out with an idea for what you want to find and know your seasonality in that way. But it's also just about the ramble and what you can encounter along the way. You know, and a lot of these things people are also familiar with, but they just don't know that they're edible. Milkweed is one of them. You know, even in Stalking the Wild Asparagus, which is a book that a lot of folks have heard of, you know, Ewell Gibbons, you know, one of the first kind of guys to popularize some of this stuff, at least in our culture, is that milkweed is a completely edible plant. You know, he lists that you have to boil it in 3 changes of water and then cook it. And that's not actually true. You know, you can eat basically any part of the plant any time of the year, although in the spring it's definitely the best. You know, you can eat the shoots. This time of year the young flowers are starting to develop. They look like little cauliflowers, and they're great to eat or pickle or throw into a pan with some onions. Definitely keep an eye out for monarch caterpillar larvae. But
which are probably high in protein anyway.
Yeah, there you go. And it's a good year for them.
What I really like about what you're describing is that you're not really sitting in a classroom with these people. You're out there.
Yeah, and that's the only way to really learn it, you know. I've definitely spent my time, you know, studying all the books I can. But, you know, you can learn 3 plants in a night studying books, you know, to your best. But if you go out with someone who has a bit of experience and you bring a piece of paper with you, you can learn 25 in a day.
Well, now tell us again about that event so everyone knows when and where, and go ahead and publicize this a little bit.
If you look up Legacy Learning Boone River Valley, they're based out of Webster City. You can figure out the details for the event. We're going to be spending Saturday and Sunday tromping around the woods, and we'll have a little bit of a base camp where we can do some food prep and work with the tools that we need to build our drying racks. I'm excited to make these cordials. I've talked about them on the Donna Lana Kitchen Hour, but it's basically a wild fermented soda that turns into a champagne and then a wine and then a vinegar. And I make one that a friend of mine actually encouraged me to make out of spiderwort flowers, which are a fairly common prairie plant in the area. And it is just this brilliant royal purple, and it looks like nothing else in the world.
Well, Ben, this is fascinating. And Ben Hawks is going to be up at Webster City at Legacy Learning. And you can find out a lot about Ben and his upcoming event on their website. And we're going to have Ben stay around because we have someone else here in our studio who's going to be enlightening us on pollinators. And it seems like you, when they walked in today, they were immediately involved with each other. So I know they can do a lot to educate and edify us today. And right now we have, what, Schubert and the... What's going on, Susan?
We have a bee music. We have
That's
bee music,
I mean.
by Schubert, but it's not the Franz Schubert you know, and it's not the bee music you know. So play.
Schubert and the Bee. Thank you.
This is KHOI Community Radio with Paul Wearson and Susan Franzen, co-hosting a show about some of the unexpected events coming up in the next days here in central Iowa. You just heard from Ben Hawksh, whose two-day workshop on wild foods will take place this weekend, and you can get information on that on our website. Our next guest is Randall Cass, home extension entomologist specializing in honeybees, native bees, and pollinizers.
Well, hi, Randall. Paul here, and welcome to our studio today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You've got a lot of knowledge on pollinators, and what is the field day that's coming up this weekend for you?
Well, this Saturday, Iowa State University is partnering with the Iowa Honey Producers Association, and we are going to be hosting a field day for beekeepers. So the Iowa Honey Producers Association has hundreds of members. It's probably the largest beekeeping-related organization in the state. And every year they hold a big field day where they invite people out for different bee demonstrations and to discuss different activities. So this Saturday here at an Iowa State University farm, the Horticulture Research Farm, we'll be hosting an all-day event. So the beekeepers will arrive. We'll have a few guest speakers. Someone's going to talk about how to prepare honey and how to prepare comb and for the to enter into categories at the Iowa State Fair. So she'll be explaining how the judges judge. We'll have someone else talking about planting trees for bees, what trees are going to provide wild bees and honeybees with the best sources of pollen and nectar throughout the year. And then we'll be doing some in-hive demonstrations done by myself, Iowa beekeeper Pat Innes, and also the state apiarist Andy Joseph. So it'll be a big day.
And that's coming up this weekend. Now, how many folks do you expect to come? These are beekeepers that are coming.
Right. Well, we had to limit it because it's a limited space. So it's limited to 120 people. So unfortunately, it's not open to the community. Registration is required. I think at this point we have close to 100 beekeepers registered. But the registration is required because of the space we have and also because we're providing lunch for people who register.
Well, how many folks do you estimate in Iowa are involved in the actual production of honey and maintaining hives?
Oh, wow. So backyard beekeeping is something that's increased greatly in the past.
That's my understanding. That it's becoming popular.
Right. I think that I'm trying to remember the numbers now. I think that there was in 2005, there was maybe around 1,500 beekeepers in the state. And I think as of 2015, that had maybe tripled or quadrupled.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, in the news and in the general media out there, we're in touch with the fact that the colony collapse and all of these things we read of that are really challenges to pollinators. Can you elaborate on what's happening currently? Is there improvement? Is there good news, bad news?
Right. Well, there's not great news.
I was afraid of that.
That's probably one of the biggest questions I get. A lot of people ask me after events, so remember colony collapse disorder? Is that still a thing? I heard the bees were dying. And it's still a thing. What we called colony collapse disorder 10, 15 years ago, the scientific community has come to the consensus that it's actually sort of the impact of multiple different stressors on the bee communities. So when we talk about colony collapse disorder or bee decline, there's three main culprits that we're looking at. We're looking at pesticide exposure, we're looking at poor forage availability, and we're looking at pests and pathogens. So those three stressors kind of work synergistically and create a lot more challenges for bees.
Well, I read about in one article there are these little mites that are pesky little critters who are very damaging to the bees and bee colonies. To what extent does the harsh winter have an effect on a hive? Is that a real problem? Like some winters might be a winter where there's quite a bit of die-off and other winters are not so bad for the bee colony, or are they immune to that?
Yeah, so that's two things that are important to talk about. So like I mentioned, pests and parasites are one of the major stressors for honeybees, and the varroa mite, which is a parasite that lives inside the hive, can actually really weaken a hive. The mite will – it would be the equivalent of maybe having a –
if the mites were human-sized compared to the bee, it would be like a human walking around with a small house cat on its back that just sucked their blood and their fat out. And so these bees can So these bees are negatively affected by the varroa mite. It can really weaken an entire hive. And if a hive is weak, then it's not able to overcome diseases or any sorts of things that could be in the hive. If it was if some bees were exposed to insecticide, for example, the varroa mite, if the varroa mite has already weakened the hive, then that just puts them in a bad place.
So it's a combination of factors and not really one thing that's responsible for the challenges that the colonies have now. Are you optimistic about the future?
Yeah, I'm optimistic about the future. I think that the more I talk to people, the more people express interest in conserving pollinators. They're worried about honeybees. They're worried about native species. I think but there's a knowledge gap. People are concerned about these things, but they're not really sure what to do. And so I talk to folks about creating more habitat. Whenever we create more habitat in Iowa, a good example of that would be creating more prairie. Before we moved in with agriculture into Iowa, most of the state was covered in prairie. And for a lot of the native species and then for the honeybees as well, it provides a good source of forage in terms of pollen and nectar resources for the bees. And then for a lot of our native species, like the solitary bees, it provides a place for them to make their nests.
Well, now in urban areas, there's a wealth of flowers out there. That must help. A lot of people have flowers in their gardens. And, you know, if you look at suburban Des Moines, Urbandale or West Des Moines, you drive through there and there's just a bevy of flowers everywhere. So there must be some opportunities for bees, even in urban areas, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that urban areas can be an important place as well. The most important thing is that we have plants that are flowering all throughout the year. So bees start getting active in the early spring when here in Iowa, especially in urban areas, we have little more than dandelions. Yeah. They can use some trees like maple trees to get pollen. There's not a lot of resources in the early spring. And then since most of our land is agricultural, even throughout the year, there's not a lot of resources. And going into the fall also can be a really important time to be sure that we're planting plants that will bloom in the late summer and early fall so that, for example, honeybees can build up their stores of nectar and pollen to go into the winter.
So we can help by the choices we make in flowering plants.
Absolutely.
Now, we have honey on the shelf shipped from wherever, or you can get local honey. What's the advantage of local honey?
So the jury's kind of out on the advantages of local honey in terms of so they say, and I've heard people come up to me and say that they've experienced that eating local honey can reduce your seasonal allergies. The idea is that there are trace amounts of pollen from local flowers in the honey. So if you expose yourself to that throughout the year by eating local honey, then that can build up sort of your immune system and defenses against allergies.
That's fantastic. Just fantastic.
Is what they say. Although the scientific consensus that in the studies that they've done, they haven't been able to replicate. They haven't been able to demonstrate that this happens. But anecdotally, people are certainly behind it.
Now, what about the Ryman Garden Pollen Fest? Tell me.
I mentioned that this coming weekend, we are doing the bee event with the Iowa honey producers. But the following weekend, on June 22nd, Ryman Gardens is hosting Pollinator Fest that I'm working with the site to help coordinate. Pollinator Fest is going to be a big event from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We're inviting the whole community out to come and talk to all of our local experts about different pollinators. So this isn't just honeybees. This isn't just native bees. We're talking about monarchs and the insect zoo from Iowa State University is going to be there. So you'll get to see all sorts of different types of insects. Moreover, if in your family you have Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, any scouts, it's an opportunity to get there, I guess, for for the Boy Scouts, it's the insect study badge. So they can go around to the different booths and tables, participate in the different pollinator-related activities, and answer specific questions about insects so that they can get their badge.
So this weekend coming up is for the beekeepers and all the people who are already in the know to hone their craft and improve their treatment of their hives and raising their bees. And then the following weekend at Ryman Gardens, that's for everybody to learn more about pollinators.
Yes.
And that's just terrific. And Randall, thank you for being here. And we had Ben earlier. I was hopeful we could have both of them. They're fascinating people. We'll have you back. I think we'll do that.
Susan, I think we'll do that,
idea.
Yeah.
Maybe a whole half hour with these two people.
Yes.
It would be the Ben and Randall show and back to nature time. Thanks, guys.
Great. Thank you.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Paul Wearson and I, Susan Franzen, are your hosts for today. Paul has been talking with Ben Hulsh and Randall Cass about events with wild foods and pollinators. We'll be closing out the program with announcements of a couple of impressive musical performances coming up right away.
And speaking of that, Thursday night at the regular Bandshell concert in Bandshell Park in Ames, that's always at 8 o'clock on Thursday nights, and you spread your blanket or bring your lawn chair, and it's always a great concert by Mike Galimo and the Ames Municipal Band. But this Thursday night is a highlight of the whole season, because once a summer we have a great performance by Simon Estes. So this Thursday night at 8 o'clock, Ames Municipal Band at Bandshell Park with Simon Estes.
We are really lucky in Central Iowa to be able to have such talent as Simon Estes here to sing for us year after year. But I discovered an equally amazing concert of a different type right up the road in Jewell. When I saw this story in the Story City Herald, I could hardly believe it. Can you tell me why you would be playing the Ode to Joy on two grand pianos in the Jewell United Church of Christ? So I called Don Beatty, and here's what he had to say.
Well, number one, I thank you, because the fact that you appreciated that it was an amazing concert makes us very happy. You obviously know what's coming to some extent. And in our case, we're in Jewell because my wife, whose maiden name was Staples, Delana Staples, she and her family are from Jewell. And when her parents passed a few years ago, we moved from Illinois, where we into the family home here in Jewell. So that's why we're in Jewell. And as for Stefan Merler, our dear friend, who's in the airplane at the moment, coming here from having played in Lincoln Center in New York yesterday, we have been friends since 1986, and he's a brother to us. We've spent so much time together. He's born in Germany and teaches in Vienna. Lovely person and a wonderful pianist. And in my founding of the Beethoven Society for Pianists at Southern Illinois University Carbondale in 1984, we really got things rolling in 1987 when we decided to play all nine Beethoven symphonies in concert in a single day. And we had the Franz Liszt solo transcriptions for piano, as well as the Hugo Ulrich four-hand transcriptions. And we discovered if they were played simultaneously, they make a great sound. And so on a day in 1987, in piano ensemble, we played all nine symphonies. And our symphony playing has continued ever since then.
Isn't it rather unusual to play symphonies on pianos?
It is. The saving grace is that Beethoven was a pianist, and called by Reginald Gehrig in his book Famous Pianists and Their Technique, the first of the great pianists. And his 32 piano sonatas are very familiar. To tell you the truth, it's interesting. The publisher approached Franz Liszt and said, well, we would like you to make these piano transcriptions of the symphonies so that more people could enjoy them, which was really pretty common. In earlier days, you couldn't hear an orchestra. You might have to do what Bach did when he walked 200 miles to hear Dietrich Buxtehude play an organ recital. It wasn't as easy as it is now going down to hear Des Moines Symphony. So with that being said, and the piano gaining in popularity and people having pianos, well, maybe you could arrange these for piano so people could appreciate them. What's interesting is that Liszt successfully arranged the first 8 symphonies for piano solo, the first 3 movements of the 9th symphony, and then he stopped. And the publisher said, well, you must finish. And Liszt said, there's no way I can get all of this into 10 fingers. The orchestra, the choir, the soloist. And the publisher insisted. So actually, in that solo transcription, I think there are some places he just prints a melodic line above the piano part. So you would imagine that as you played. And with the 4-hand transcriptions by this Hugo Ulrich, who was very well known as a transcriber, not so well known now, this is the origin of those. And with our Beethoven Society, we had founded to celebrate the music of young people and teachers and audiences and great artists. So the kids were coming and playing at our festivals and said, well, let's see, what can the adults do? What can we do together? And to tell you the truth, a driving force from day one has been those words from the 9th, let all men be his brothers. So to put ourselves at pianos playing the symphonies together has been glorious. We've done concerts of 6 and 7 grand pianos playing simultaneously, and I was so delighted, one reviewer said. He said, I grew up listening to the Dick Toscanini NBC Orchestra recordings. He said, I went to this concert, I was in Kansas, expecting novelty. And he said, I was wrong. It was remembered beauty in a new light. So it is something special.
And that is going to be tonight. Why don't you tell us again where, how people can find it?
Well, when you come to Jewell, Jewell is Highway 69, coming north out of Ames, and Jewell doesn't even have a traffic light. So when you come into our little downtown area, you'll see the post office. If you're coming from the south, on the left-hand side, and Jewell United Church of Christ is right there next to the post office. And it's 600 Main Street. We're expecting many to come. Stefan has played here twice now. He played in the summer of 2017 and 2018, and he's just so extraordinary and such a funny fellow and such a personable person. Plus, he has a following, and of course, with us living here, Delana has a lovely family in Iowa and Ohio and Minnesota, and lots are coming. But at the sanctuary in the church, and we're very grateful to be at the church for helping us to stage this, I will give a pre-concert talk at 6:30, and the concert begins at 7 with Stefan playing the very famous sonata in B minor by Franz Liszt, which is a magnificent opening to the concert. And then after intermission, my wife Delana and I will join Stefan, and the three of us will play Symphony 9.
Now, you said your wife is also playing. Are you playing 4-hands?
Yes, Delana and I have played the 4-hand arrangements of the symphonies for many years. And what's interesting about Stefan, some years back, the American Liszt Society, I was very good friends with the president at that time, Fernando Laris, and he had been with our festivals, and he said, well, we'll have a symphony festival. So one year at the Liszt Society Festival, they had 9 colleagues who played the 9 symphonies. And he said from the beginning, there's only one person in the world I would ask to play the 9th, and it's Stefan Merler. Stefan actually plays his own 2-hand piano arrangement. He adds things that he felt like Liszt might have put in. Playing with Stefan is a joy. We've done it many times, but not in a long time, and we're so happy to do it in Jewell this week.
The other day, you told me a lot about Stefan, and I think it might be helpful if you told just a little about...
Indeed.
Yes.
Stefan's very proud of the fact that he was born in Hamburg, like Brahms. Early on in his career, he was teaching at a conservatory in Bremen, Germany. But like Beethoven and so many composers and artists, all roads lead to Vienna. So he was very anxious to get a teaching position there, which he did in 1999. And he's advanced in this conservatory for performing arts in Vienna. Stefan plays all the time. He travels so many places. He founded the International Pianist Academy, Vienna International Pianist Academy, years ago. And he's done wonderful things in Vienna, but he continues to come to America, and we have done many things together. But what really will be the pinnacle of his career He has played the 32 sonatas of Beethoven for years. He actually was a prize winner in Beethoven competition in Vienna in 85. But to mark Beethoven's 250th birth year next year, 2020, he's going to play the 32 sonatas in 32 venues in the world. And he's already booked in Australia and South America and Asia and Europe and New York and Jewel, October 2020. And what's so extraordinary, he actually plays them all in 2 days. He does a Saturday and Sunday matinee and a Saturday and Sunday evening concert. We'll be playing all 32 sonatas in order. And he's just awesome. And I can't wait. And we will share this news in the year to come and with your colleagues there. He's a very special friend.
And he's going to be playing those sonatas in Jewel?
The United Church of Christ in Jewel, yes. We're very blessed. You know, I remember years ago, we were able to have Conrad Wolf as our guest. Conrad studied with Arthur Schnabel, an extraordinary pianist and scholar. He taught at Peabody in Baltimore. He authored books. A wonderful man. And when he found our Beethoven Society for Pianists in Carbondale and wanted to come, he said, "Oh, I'm so excited. Your love of Beethoven is stellar, but Carbondale appears to be near nowhere. How do I get there?" And Carbondale is a bit out of the way. You know, we're not on a main interstate like some places. And it's the same thing with Jewel. Jewel is a little town, but it's a lovely town with lovely people. And for us, it's never where we are. It's what you can do. And Stefan comes because we are friends, and we're very happy to make this music right here. You have a glorious tradition of music in Ames, and with the university, and really throughout Iowa. Iowa is a beautiful place that supports the arts and music. So we have made the Beethoven Society home here in Jewel and look forward to many concerts that we can share in the years to come.
just heard John Ferguson playing the Franz Liszt arrangement of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony for the piano. The dual piano concert of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, performed by Stefan Muller and Don Beatty, will take place at the Jewel United Church of Christ, 600 Main Street, tonight, June 12th, at 7 p.m., with a pre-concert talk by Don Beatty at 6:30. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Paul Wearson and I, Susan Franzen, have been your hosts for today. Other voices you heard were Ben Hawksh, Randall Cass, and Don Beatty. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on KHOI at 89.1 FM. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was The Bee from Joseph Sigley plays Schubert, and a brief excerpt from Symphony No. 9 by Ludwig von Beethoven, arranged by Franz Liszt and performed by John Ferguson.
Now, Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you'll need to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by Northminster Presbyterian Church, presenting the 2019 Vacation Bible School, Marketplace 29 AD, an opportunity for experiential learning. Children from preschool to sixth grade are invited to visit and interact with a recreated marketplace from biblical times, June 16th to the 20th, from 6 o'clock to 8 p.m. Information and registration forms are found at www.aimsnpc.org.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by the 2019-2020 Performing Arts Series at Stevens Auditorium. For information on ticket packages and upcoming performances, go to center.iastate.edu.